WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Harvard President Claudine Gay has survived an effort to oust her after anger over her testimony to Congress last week about anti-Semitism on campus.
Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be, depending on the context.
Harvard's governing board issued a statement this morning acknowledging Gay made mistakes, calling her the right leader to help our community heal and address serious societal issues. The school's decision was originally reported by the newspaper, school newspaper, WBZ's Drew Mulholland.
In a letter to school officials, President Gay has also told the Crimson herself she should have returned to her guiding truth and that calls for violence against the school's Jewish students have no place at Harvard.
After last week's testimony, some wealthy donors, alumni, and students ramped up calls for Gay's ouster. Penn President Liz McGill resigned over the weekend. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Harvard President Claudine Gay has survived an effort to oust her after anger over her testimony to Congress last week about anti-Semitism on campus.
Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be, depending on the context.
Harvard's governing board issued a statement this morning acknowledging Gay made mistakes, calling her the right leader to help our community heal and address serious societal issues. The school's decision was originally reported by the newspaper, school newspaper, WBZ's Drew Mulholland.
In a letter to school officials, President Gay has also told the Crimson herself she should have returned to her guiding truth and that calls for violence against the school's Jewish students have no place at Harvard.
After last week's testimony, some wealthy donors, alumni, and students ramped up calls for Gay's ouster. Penn President Liz McGill resigned over the weekend. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Packers lose in New York. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Giants march down the field with just over a minute left to beat Green Bay 24-22. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur.
You get a Monday night game and a big stage, and ultimately you got to do it on game day.
Giants quarterback Tommy DeVito on keeping calm in just his fourth NFL start.
Of course, I think as a quarterback, you have to stay even keel through it all, you know, because when you're winning like we are now, everything is high, and when you lose, everything's low. So as a quarterback, you have to be able to stay even through it all. I take pride in that. Something that I've grown over, obviously, over time from when I was playing, from when I was five, throughout high school and college, just continuing to grow that part of my game.
NBA, the Bucks at home beat the Bulls in overtime, 133-129. Milwaukee's Damian Lillard, with only 14 points, not one of his better nights.
You know when you get to that point where, like, shots you usually make aren't going in, you miss a one that you feel like is easy, you know, you miss a free throw, and you're like, man, it's one of those nights.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. From Sevier Studios, I'm Corey Hartman with a look at your forecast for today. Sunshine, highs around 27. Partly cloudy tonight, mid-teens. On your Wednesday, we'll see sunshine and a high around 34. A little warmer Thursday, 44. And a chance of rain on Friday with a high of 43.
It's 21 right now.
OptUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5 The Tap. Online at thetap.fm.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Don we now our gay apparel,
fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, we want to kind of clean up the callers from the last hour. We got a different direction we're going in. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. You can always join us at 844-967-2789, Texas, that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Cindy, I didn't mean for you to hang up. We'll always welcome your call, so call back, and we'll certainly entertain your thoughts. But in the interim, so Cindy, yeah, you can call back. So in the interim, Sandy, wanted to talk about what's happening with many university professors and presidents of universities who are being called on the carpet and even forced to resign and even fired. At least Stefanik, who is a Republican from New York, and others are bringing severe pressure on university presidents who they're saying they need to do something to address anti-Semitism on their campuses. And so Republicans hostile to the way elite universities shape the nation's cultural and political debates are smelling blood in the water after disastrous hearing in which the presidents of three schools refused to say students who call for genocide of Jews would be disciplined. One of the presidents, Liz McGill of the University of Pennsylvania, has already resigned, and Republicans are seeking to stoke pressure on the other two who testified last week, Claudine Gay of Harvard University and Sally Kornbluth of Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, have been under tremendous pressure, Sandy, to bring their students into compliance, apparently. I don't know what that is.
Well, into compliance with what exactly? I mean, I think this whole discussion about the Mideast problem is so fraught with problems associated with words and meaning and semantics and the emotion that might be behind it. Because, Zionism has been a long-term used, meant originally to be the notion that it was appropriate for Jews to be given a homeland in the Mideast, which was their roots, so that there would be essentially this return to Zion. And ultimately that was manifested in the establishment of the country of Israel in 1948. And And so pro-Zionism, presumably pro-Zionism means that you're for having a country homeland. Of Israel, right. A homeland. And I think I would certainly agree that I am ardently in favor of Israel being a country and it being protected by the world and sanctified by the world and held and kept safe from its neighbors and from any particular risk. Does that mean, however, that I can't question the policies of the country of Israel with respect to the things that is doing? For instance, in today's world, the way it is conducting its war on Hamas. To question how Israel is carrying out its war on Hamas should not be deemed to be, per se, anti-Zionist, okay? And it should not be deemed to be, per se, anti-Semitic. It's simply questioning at the national level, the governmental level, whether the policy that's being implemented is a correct one, okay? But it's very difficult to have that debate today because people are being accused, if they are hesitant to support the policies of Israel today, then some people want to trot out the term anti-Zionist or anti-Semitic. And it's very troublesome because in some respects it's maybe overplaying a card. There is anti-Semitism in the United States. There has been forever, and it has subsided substantially. I can attest to the fact that when I graduated from Columbia Law School in 1970, it was the first year that the major law firms in New York City decided that they would hire Jews, regardless of their talent. I was on the Law Review of Columbia, the top 20 students in the class, and I would guess that three quarters of us were Jewish. And yet, Jews weren't hired until 1970. So yes, anti-Semitism is a dangerous thing. It has resided in the United States. We've long known that country clubs for a long time weren't admitting Jews except the ones that did. But that's interpersonal anti-Semitism. That's a big problem. But questioning the policies of the nation of Israel should not be construed to be anti-Semitic unless it is based on a bias against Jewish people generally. And I think that's where this whole debate has broken down, because I think there are people questioning the policies of the country of Israel who are not personally biased whatsoever against Jewish people. In fact, our Secretary of State Blinken is himself Jewish and is himself asking questions about the nature of the reaction of the Jewish government, of the Israeli government, to the Hamas situation and Gaza. So I just think we need to be careful to differentiate and to not create broad brush definitions that make it impossible for us to have discussion. And I think it's that broad brush that has been used, that has put these presidents of universities in a tough spot, because universities are the place where freedom of speech has always been the most protected.
So that's the thing that puzzles me, Sandy, is we're telling these students, because that's why the university presidents are in trouble, because of what the students are saying and doing.
Well, I think the question is what should be done with those students.
Right.
I think the question was, should you expel those students or otherwise? And the question that was asked was a hyperbole, you know, students who call for the genocide of Jews. I don't know how many students, and I'm not familiar with what's being
right.
said on campus, but my bet is that very few students are ever using words like calling
genocide.
For the genocide
right.
of Jews. I think there are some pro-Palestinian students who are using the pro-Palestinian terms of from the river to the sea, which was used by, I think, Hamas, but Palestinians generally who want to have a single state that includes Israel but includes Palestinians, not a two-state solution, a one-state solution. And I think that has been talked about as being from the river to the sea. Some have construed from the river to the sea to mean the Hamas discussion of potentially eliminating Jews. And so that obviously would be a serious problem.
So
but they're dicing words. And I'm afraid that this is all being used really as a political wedge to try and drive a wedge between Jews and liberal politics, because it is true that I'm confident that a material majority of Jews in America have voted
Democrat,
okay? And so I'm sure it's very appealing to the Republicans to drive a wedge between that, and I think that's what's ongoing. But I think in America we have to be careful. We can't defeat free speech in the name of
anything, right?
Yes, anything. And in fact, the ACLU is careful to preserve the right of speech for Nazis, okay, to speak.
Right.
Now, conduct and speech are two different things, but speech is typically very protected. Conduct, not so much. Now, on the campus, the question is, what action should universities take to restrict speech? Well, campuses have always been a place where we've had extremes, okay? During Vietnam, when I was going, there was obviously great extremes. People against Vietnam, people for Vietnam, people demonstrating,
burning their draft cards,
right. Doing all sorts of symbolic speech, burning American flags. Were they kicked out of school? No. But did it represent the majority of the students? No. I just think that when government starts intruding into campuses and starts restricting the freedom of speech that is allowed on campuses, we are on a very slippery slope.
You know, Sandy, you said a mouthful. It certainly, I think, has to be said, because, you know, and you've got to look into the mind of young people. They don't have the kinds of filters, I guess I would say, that those of us who've been around for a long time have, based on our experiences in our lifetime. And these are young people,
yeah,
and they're idealistic. And that's what education is supposed to be about, right? I mean, you as a young person, you're out here, you're feeling and growing and understanding yourself as well as the society, testing the limits of things. And if you take that away from young people, Sandy, I don't know if it benefits our nation to control young thought, which eventually becomes the people who will be running our country. Am I making any sense?
No, of course you are. I think, you know, conversation and talk deserves responses and conversation. So if people disagree with what is being said, then there ought to be a discussion about the disagreement, the facts underlying the disagreement, expose that disagreement. I mean, debate, that's what debate is. But debate is not eliminating the other side in the debate, creating echo chambers, okay? Echo chambers are not the process that universities should be. And we certainly ought to make sure that the universities that don't want to be echo chambers are not echo chambers.
So, Sen, is it safe to say that what our nation stands for and has stood for centuries now is the very thing we're talking about?
Absolutely. You know,
hold the thought. 844-967-2789. You can join the conversation. Tune into the Earl Ingram Show.
Follow me in merry measure, while I tell of Yuletide treasure.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap. Okay.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, and we were talking about this before the break. We were talking about freedom of speech and whether or not students who have their own opinions and their own ideas, which is what our nation is supposedly about, which is the reason that so many young people, Sandy, are sent off to war, and they're supposedly fighting for democracy and freedom and all those kinds of things. You can't take that away from the people in this country and then say, well, we've got to do something about those people and because they need to be controlled, their thoughts need to be controlled. I just think that it's challenging everything that the flag is supposed to stand for, Sandy, everything that all the people who've died in wars are supposed to stand for. And it looks like we're threatening to take those kinds of things away. A handful of people are looking to take that away. And we should be outspoken about that. Is it safe to say that?
Well, I think we need to be outspoken about protecting debate, okay? And I think what we should stand for is trying to understand why people have positions and not attacking and not eliminating their capacity to express their positions. Because tightly held, secretly held positions are just as harmful as expressed opinions. And in fact, sometimes more harmful. I mean, we know that secretly held racism is just as problematic as publicly expressed racism. We know that biases that are internal are just as damaging as those that are expressed. And if they're expressed, they're actually capable of being dealt with. We know that opinions that are suppressed aren't eliminated. And so I think that what's unhealthy is the notion that we should bottle things up, make sure that people conform in all that they say and do with some particular litmus test of what is proper. And that's what happens in countries that we point at and say, that's an authoritarian country. You wouldn't want to live there. You won't have the freedom of thought. You won't have the freedom of speech. Okay? Those are the fundamental principles that we have in America that differentiate us, we think. And we don't want to get rid of those, and we don't want to do it inadvertently and emotionally. And so, you know, I think that the debate, I think that some people hold reprehensible opinions, okay? But they have those opinions, and I'd rather hear them than not know about them and not be able to have a discussion with them. Debate is the way we elucidate, okay, the way we learn and the way we modify our thoughts.
You know, Sandy, I just think that we are now living in a society where there are red states and blue states, different countries. Based on whether you're a red state or a blue state, it's like you're in a different country. And so we can't see things, and that's where the debate has to come in, right? If you disagree with what somebody else is saying,
right,
rather than take a club and hit somebody over the head, it's best to have dialogue and work that through, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, students undoubtedly might have opinions that are not based on a full knowledge of the situation. There are students who support the Palestinians, and particularly the drive for a Palestinian state. Some of those people might support Hamas and the principles they use. We had Irish people in America supporting the IRA, okay?
Right.
I had friends.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I had some friends, actually, who I knew to be sending money to the IRA and to be supporting them. The IRA was doing terrible, terroristic things, blowing up civilians in London and in around England. But we need to understand what it is that people are thinking, what they're feeling, so that we can talk about it and put facts out to try and better understand it and to better realize what a correct course of action might be. I do think that this upwelling of support for Palestinians does reflect the fact that the world is impatient with the fact that between the Palestinians and the Israelis, they have not been able to work out a peace arrangement that is viable. They have not been able to work out a two-state solution, which the United States, Russia, all sorts of countries have attempted to indicate to them needs to be accomplished. And so, you know, some of this resistance and some of this debate probably is frustration at the fact that this circumstance has arisen, and one of the reasons it's arisen is because that two-state solution has never been reached.
You know, Sandy, I just hope that we come to a point in the society that we stop going down the road that we're going down, because I think there's some permanent damage that is being done to the American people, where they're forced to go and think either this way or that way, and not have their own independent thought.
Well, you know, the McCarthy period, the early 50s in the United States, was a terrifying period in that regard. It was Orwellian. It was a period in which thought and secret views and the whole notion that people were communists if they behaved in some particular way, whether or not they belonged to the party, it terrified Hollywood. It terrified a substantial part of America. And I fear that we have this in us, okay? This is part of what human beings have in them, which is to require conformity and to lean on people to believe in some fashion and to not believe in some other fashion. And we have to be careful about that, okay? We don't want the McCarthy period to be duplicated in some other fashion.
You know, Sandy, I had almost forgotten about that period, and the fact where careers were destroyed solely because of their thoughts and their views. And we're in a dangerous point in time now. I'm not saying it's as bad, but I think it's headed clearly in a direction that you're my enemy if you don't agree with what I'm saying to you.
Well, the hearing that then called for the firing of presidents of universities and in the political process, getting directly involved in the education processes of private universities, is kind of pretty reflective of that sort of era, you know? So I think we have to be careful that we don't let politics begin to dictate the debate in America of things in general.
All right. 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll return shortly.
All the way home I'll be warm, and the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you'd love me so, let it snow and snow. Finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really grab me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you love me so, let it snow.
If anyone knows what's on tap, It's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5, The Tap.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's Secretary of State is calling for a fake elector for Donald Trump to be removed from his position on the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Bob Spindell was one of 10 Republicans who signed certificates in 2020 that falsely claimed Trump had won Wisconsin. Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski says Spindell is not fit for the post. Spindell has not responded to reporters asking for comment. The University of Wisconsin Board of Regents meets in a special session today to talk about possibly accepting the funding deal they rejected Saturday. Republican leaders of the state legislature say that was their best and final offer. Among other things, the offer would repurpose about 40 diversity employees in exchange for pay raises for 35,000 UW workers. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation are teaming up to host a civics competition for area middle schoolers. Students from grades 6 to 8 are invited to participate in the contest and will have a chance to win recognition, prizes, and finalists will receive an invitation to compete in the inaugural National Civics Bee in fall of 2024. The local competition will be held on April 13, 2024, and students interested in participating must submit their essays by January 9, 2024. Underage tobacco and nicotine sales are on the rise in Wisconsin, putting millions of dollars of federal funding at risk. A SINAR survey report found that the rate of selling tobacco to underage Wisconsin residents jumped from 5.5% in 2019 to 13.6% in 2023. Confusion between the state law and federal laws has contributed to the rise in underage people getting access to tobacco and nicotine products. Wisconsin could lose federal funding that goes to states with low rates of underage tobacco sales. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WCFW News.
The Todd Almaz Show.
Even Republican women, when they walk into that booth, that reversal of RVW is going to walk in with them because that cuts to the very essence of what a woman is and what she can be and what she can decide. To speak in Wisconsin terminology, the reversal of Roe v. Wade is the right bower for Democrats. That's a Euchre reference.
That is spot on. You nailed it, John Roach, once again.
The Todd Almaz Show. Weekdays, noon to 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Packers lose in New York. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Giants march down the field with just over a minute left to beat Green Bay 24-22. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur.
You get a Monday night game and a big stage, and ultimately you got to do it on game day.
Giants quarterback Tommy DeVito on keeping calm in just his fourth NFL start.
Of course, I think as a quarterback, you have to stay even keel through it all, you know, because when you're winning like we are now, everything is high, and when you lose, everything's low. So as a quarterback, you have to be able to stay even through it all. I take pride in that. Something that I've grown over, obviously, over time from when I was playing, from when I was five, throughout high school and college, just continuing to grow that part of my game.
NBA, the Bucks at home beat the Bulls in overtime, 133-129. Milwaukee's Damian Lillard, with only 14 points, not one of his better nights.
You know when you get to that point where, like, shots you usually make aren't going in, you miss a one that you feel like is easy, you know, you miss a free throw, and you're like, man, it's one of those nights.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Looking for a reliable, fast, and unlimited internet provider? Look no further than BugTussle. Whether you're streaming, gaming, working, or learning, BugTussle has
from
you
Severe
covered.
Studios, I'm Corey Hartman with a look at your forecast. For today, sunshine, highs around 27. Partly cloudy tonight, mid-teens. On your Wednesday, we'll see sunshine and a high around 34. A little warmer Thursday, 44. And a chance of rain on Friday with a high of 43.
Right now, it's 22.
Looking for a reliable, fast, and unlimited internet provider? Look no further than BugTussle. Whether you're streaming, gaming, working, or learning, BugTussle has you covered. BugTussle has continued to serve the rural communities of Wisconsin for over 20 years by providing the most reliable, high-speed internet and excellent local customer service. Call 877-227-0924 or visit btussle.com to get started. BugTussle. We're out there because you're out there.
From Liney Lodge and Carson Park, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown and all of Wisconsin. 93.5, The Tap.
Mr. Kringle is soon gonna jingle the bells that'll tingle all your troubles away. Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. I mean, Tuesday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, Volodymyr Zelensky is back in America. And President Biden invited him because they're really concerned about the outcome of what's going to be happening towards the end of this year and early next year. And the fact that the United States is, I guess, there's $4 billion left of resources that they're going to, that our government has decided to spend on Ukraine. And the cupboard's going to be bare. And so President Biden talked about $100 billion that he wanted. Is that non-discretionary spending for $60 billion for Ukraine, $14 billion for Iran, Israel.
Yeah.
$14 additional billion, you know, for replenishing our weapons that have been, you know, used, and some dollars to help, I guess, Ukraine make it through. Their government has been decimated. And how long have we been talking? It's Sandy, we're going into year number three. And I remember from the onset with the invasion, you and I having the conversation. I don't think it was here. We were somewhere else, maybe on Brady Street.
It's on Brady Street.
Yeah, and we were talking about what could happen. And I remember you saying, man, just like yesterday, what is the end game? Why are we going to be there for the long haul? You kept saying that over and over and
well,
over.
Well, my question was whether it really reflected this kind of strategic interest, the real strategic interest of the United States, such that anybody looking at it from the Republican or the Democratic side would recognize how strategically important it was for the United States to be there and to be involved in the war, right? And the fact that we weren't willing to put boots on the ground was certainly a significant hint to us that it wasn't strategic, okay, that it was not that level of strategic. It was sort of a collateral level of strategic, one in which we were willing to conduct a proxy war, but not one in which we were willing to be directly involved. In fact, we've gone to great pains to make sure we are not directly involved. But a proxy war is simply the expenditure of money. It's sending things to the combatant that you are backing, and it's an open checkbook potentially. And so were we willing to have an open checkbook to Ukraine in this circumstance? And I think unfortunately we're finding out that we don't have enough unanimity in our position, and it suggests that our allies need to be very careful about counting on the word of America, other than treaties, you know, the treaty obligation. And will we stand behind, for instance, Article 5 of NATO, which requires that we
defend
every country in NATO as if it was part of the United States, meaning boots on the ground and whatever it takes. And so... You know, we need to make sure that when we get involved, we are doing it with full commitment so that we can demonstrate to the world that we are reliable. We are a reliable ally. Our word can be taken at its word, okay? And the Republicans who want to point at Joe Biden for backing out of Afghanistan, okay, for coming out of Afghanistan, right, and losing 13 American troops and leaving behind a bunch of money and demonstrating weakness— what do they think will be the world's view and Putin's view, for instance, of the United States and its strength if what we do is we stop funding Ukraine and leave Ukraine hanging out there in the cold. And so, you know, I just can't believe the hypocrisy of the discussion, in which one side of the discussion is that somehow that we've demonstrated weakness by getting out of a war that we were in for 20 years without great purpose. And on the other hand, suggesting that we ought to simply stop supporting a combatant, okay, that we essentially put in the position they're in by the promises we gave them.
And so let me ask you, Sandy, because what it looks like to me is that the United States used Ukraine in order to deplete some of Russia's military armaments. Their army clearly has been diminished. The capabilities of their military has been diminished somewhat at the expense of Americans not losing one life. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, it does look like that, but we might have been too smart by one half, because all of the sanctioning that we did and all of the isolation
didn't
that we've
work.
Done of Russia, well, it didn't really work, number one. Number two, it has driven together people who we don't necessarily want to have embracing one another.
Russia,
so we've
China,
got Russia and China closer to embracing one another. We have Russia and Iran embracing one another, not something that existed in the past. So, we've created bedfellows who might be a long-term problem. We've also, through the isolation process, have put the OPEC cartel, in which Russia plays a very significant part in OPEC too, into a significant position. Our policies towards Venezuela has driven Venezuela in the direction of being cozy with Russia. So I'm just not sure, if we look at this in 10 years, whether we'll think we were awfully smart in the way we handled this, or too smart by one half.
So let me ask you, Sandy, because the Republicans clearly are saying we are willing to work with Ukraine. We'll work with Ukraine. We can't do it now. It's too late, because it's too late to work out a border issue here in the United States and at the border. So we want you to understand we're still with you, but we just got to wait. We've got to work out this border deal with the Democrats first. And Zelensky is saying, hey, whoa, wait a minute. There is no pause in war, right?
Right. Mañana doesn't work very well as an excuse in war, okay? Mañana is not good enough for me because there's been a great delay, first of all, in lots of the aid we've given. The actual munitions, the actual equipment hasn't yet even been delivered, because there's a lead time, okay?
Right.
So the only thing you can send immediately to somebody is cash. You can get cash there right away. As for supplies, that takes a while. There's the logistical requirements of manufacturing it on top of shipping it, et cetera. And so mañana doesn't work very well for a combatant.
So here we are. And again, the people keep saying you're always beating up Republicans. It's not a matter, Sandy, of this thing is bigger than Democrat-Republican. And as you stated, our government is made up of both Democrats and Republicans. And so it's not separated. What the rest of the world doesn't say, that's the Republicans from the United States acting that way. That's the Democrats. They see one government, right?
Well, I would fault the fact that we got in, that we staked out the positions we did with respect to Ukraine in the first place in 2014 and what have you. But let me say, that's a bipartisan problem. The Republicans were just as enthusiastic about supporting Ukraine as the Democrats. And the Eastern European policies we've had have been faulty really ever since the breakup of the Soviet Union, in terms of how we have determined to approach it. And it lies at the bipartisan feet of our international affairs policymakers. And so, but the fact is that once we have a policy, once we have adopted a policy of supporting an entity like Ukraine and making them promises which cause them to stiffen their backs and to not negotiate a settlement with Russia when they were surrounded by Russian troops in late 2020 and early 2021, you know, at that point, our allies will look at us and say, okay, can we count on you? Can we count on you? And our opponents will look at us and say, maybe we can count on you.
You know, Sandy, to ignore what is happening and, you know, on the surface, that these people who, again, have gone all in, clearly the people who are fighting in Ukraine, Sandy, the people who are putting their lives on the line, and kind of, you know, to see that, hey, maybe this was, didn't make sense. And I just don't, because the American people have kind of gotten tired of it as well. And so we're not demanding that, look, you shouldn't put this, this should not be tied, these issues should not be tied together. The issue of whether or not the border issue is dealt with, Sandy, and should not be tied together with what's going on in Ukraine. Just should not be.
Well, I don't think it should be tied together in the current circumstance. I do think that everything in our budget needs to be evaluated. And when we decide to adopt policies which have the potential to cost a great deal, at that point in time, there ought to be a great deal of analysis done. And I would fault American policymaking in that regard, because we don't do a good job of planning and allocating in the long run, and we've got far too much allocated to our military budget as a result of being way overextended in the way we have decided to address our potential foreign affairs.
So, Sandy, let me ask you then, if, because is this going to impact Israel as well, the $14 billion that President Biden has requested for Israel? We're going to continue. We still have some things in reserve. It's not going to impact Israel. They're going to get what we've been promising them. We're going to make sure that we deliver that, but we can't do both, is it?
Well, the $14 billion, I don't think they broke the package apart, so I think the $14 billion that's in this $100 billion...
Israel's not going to get right now.
Israel's not going to get it right now.
But we have some other things that we can give to Israel. I mean, we're certainly not going to say to Israel, you're not going to get the weapons that you need.
You know, it's surprising. We seem to always be able to come up with munitions and weapons to supply to parties in the world, and I presume that Israel will get first call on
right.
What we've got. But I just think that this is further indication of the inability of the American processes. I think this is part of the fracture in government right now, and we've got a Congress which acts irresponsibly and uses levers whenever they find them to accomplish a purpose that is obscure, okay? But, you know, Congress has had plenty of reason to solve the border problem for 20 years, 25 years, and has done nothing, okay? And it's bipartisan. It's not that the Democrats have resisted and the Republicans have pushed for it. No, there's been no effort for any solution that is based on process and policies. You know, Trump's wall was not going to solve the policy issues associated with how we process immigrants, how we decide how many immigrants, how we make our choices.
So, Sandy, when we return, I clearly, 2024 is upon us. I want you to kind of rank things based on the importance of what our nation and what we as Americans are going to be faced with in 2024. You know, certainly it's an election year, but all these other things that are going on, if we don't somehow get those things under control, 2024 might be a very eventful year for the wrong reasons. 844-967-2789 is the number. Talk to you in a few.
Better watch out now.
93.5 The Tap,
the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Dane County Executive Joe Parisi. Joe, let me ask you. You've made a little news. You have declared what in regard to the Twitter, now known as the X, and the Dane County municipal accounts. Joe, have you banned Twitter?
Well, we're no longer going to be using Twitter, I think is probably the...
Is that the same as banning Twitter, sir?
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
When I first had my baby, I'd get comments all the time about how happy I must be. I remember thinking, I want to be happy. Why don't I feel that way? It was hard to admit that, even to my doctor, but I'm glad I did. She told me it was postpartum depression, and that is very treatable. These days, things are feeling good, and we're both happier about that. Right, little man? I'll take that as a yes.
Mental health care is working for Simone. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
When the bells all ring and the horns all blow, and the couples we know are fondly kissing, will I be with you, or will I be among the missing?
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's, you know, it's 2024 in the twinkling of an eye. We're going to be there. And in this, for all the reasons in the world, Sandy, appears to be a pivotal time in the history of our nation. It's still hard for me to believe we're almost a quarter into the, 21st century, and things seem to be falling apart. And it just doesn't appear, Sandy, that there are people willing to do what's necessary to work through it. So if you had to list the most important things as we prepare to go into 2025, where would you put them? How would you rate them?
Well, you know, we've got these brush fire things that are not, in the long arc of history, what's going to affect American society the most. So we've got, the situations abroad. And those are at some level of importance to us. But if I was to put the most important thing on the table, I would say that it's helping middle America, Tom, Dick, and Mary, forge a successful lifestyle which affords them the American dream, which is currently not within reach. So I think our political apparatus needs to start focusing on policies that will make a difference in the lifestyle. We've got the division of wealth in this country has become greater and greater, and the top 10% of people in this country are experiencing the prosperity of the economy, while the people in the median income level and below are struggling, living paycheck to paycheck, not being able to save for their retirements, not being able to save for the education of their children, not being able to pay off their student debts, not able to afford adequate health care, paying for their insurance leaves them still with massive deductible copay requirements that make it very difficult for them to experience health care without suffering. And so we need to address what middle America needs. Or if middle America continues to slide as it is, we will continue to have the same level of rancor and anger that subliminally exists within middle America. And it is what is eating at our soul, I believe. I believe that it is the reason we can't talk to one another, because we have so many frustrated people who are angry with their circumstance.
So how do you change that trajectory? I mean, is it political? Is it?
It's definitely political, and we've got to have people, we've got to start having those people recognize their self-interest in getting the situation resolved. People who can't afford private child daycare need to look around the rest of the world and realize that in most countries, that's not a private That's not a risk that is borne by the individual or a cost. So, the people who are worried about educating their children need to look around the world and realize that other countries with better and different priorities have made different decisions. And so we need to elect people who will address things and look at these things, and we ought to be talking about
that. So I was reading something the other day, Sandy, that projected $889 billion for military and $740 billion for the other things that are necessary. With an imbalance like that, Sandy, that's a projection of next year's budget. How is it possible that we can even, with that kind of, you know, vision already on the table?
Well, we need to get our grip on the military-industrial complex.
We haven't been able to do it.
Well, I know. Dwight Eisenhower warned us about it. We're at 75 years now and ticking in terms of that warning. And you know, we need to take stock of what it is that America needs to do and should be doing in the world. And we can't afford, probably, we need to realize that we can't afford to be everywhere and do everything in terms of enforcing some world law, okay, that the United Nations or some other organization needs to take responsibility. We need to look out for our strategic interests, what's important to Tom, Dick, and Mary. And some of that is international, and a great deal of that is domestic.
You know, Sandy, it just based on what we see with the amount of munitions that have been given to Ukraine, and then munitions were given to Israel, $889 billion. That's going to the military, because people clearly argue that we need to, you know, replenish our munitions. So I don't see them touching that or changing that.
The 889?
Yeah.
No, I mean, the fact that it was $335 billion in 2000 should be something that wakes us up a bit and to realize how much our appetite for this has grown, okay? And so I just think that next year we need to get the family around the table and have it start talking about the things that the family really needs and wants in order to thrive. And if we don't, I think that a half of the problem we've got today with respect to our politics, the angry, dissatisfied people who are deciding to embrace, for instance, Donald Trump, not because he promises to give them anything substantial, only because he reflects their anger and dissatisfaction.
I got to tell you, I'm kind of speechless. I didn't even realize that defense budget was only $300 billion 23 years ago.
Yeah, I'll have to Google it. But we on the show one day looked to see, and I can't remember what year we went back to find out, but the number was 335, and it was in the time range of the year 2000.
So you would have to ask the question, what threats increased so much from 2000 to 2024
We conducted the Iraq War and the Afghani War, both of them about 20 years in duration. At great expense, without great knowledge of the American people. We didn't talk about it day to day or anything like that. We just spent a whole ton of money on it.
Right. And now, you know, we can see the impact of what that has wrought.
Yeah.
Sandy, always great to talk to you, my friend. Really appreciate it. You and I will be back together on Friday. Thank everybody who made the show go. Up next is Greg Bach, Jane Madnair, As Goes Wisconsin. Calvin, I got it, right? All right. We'll see you later.
Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Anybody who's ever breastfed a child knows that breast milk is liquid gold. Preserve it at all costs.
Oh, that's what Kristen talking about. Yeah. Freezing it, like pumping, freezing. She's like, I have bricks of it. I'm like, this sounds like a reboot of Breaking Bad. Like, this is...
In the breast
Breaking breast. Breaking breast.
Breaking breast. Well done.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W2280 P. Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS.